21 years ago, on Wednesday, the 17th of November 1989, a student march was brutally attacked by the police in Prague's Národní Street. That event sparked a public revolt against the regime and eventually led to the fall of communism in Czechoslovakia. In this special program, we walk along Národní Street, or Národní Třída, a remarkable boulevard which is home to the National Theatre, the jazz club where Bill Clinton played, and some of the city's greatest cafes, a street where history was made 2 decades ago. Some 10,000 people, mostly students, reached Národní by 7 p.m. on Friday, the 17th of November, 1989. By then, they were aware that the march, planned as a commemoration of a Nazi crackdown on Czech universities, had become much more than that. One of the people in the crowd was a young English teacher, Markéta Kolářová, who joined the march with her husband on the day of their wedding anniversary.
At that point, Národní was very much aware of, or the people who were there were very much aware that something was happening. So they were leaning out of the windows in some houses, because some of them were probably official or office houses. But I remember the windows of the National Theatre new building being really full of actors waving and showing the victory sign to people and the thumbs up. There was a crowd at there is a wine restaurant, the Cloister Cafe or restaurant, that was, people went out and waved and cheered. Actually, of course, the reactions were pretty much positive.
Long before that day, Národní, or National Street, was already one of the most important arteries of the Czech capital. Looking from the river, Národní třída begins with Národní divadlo, or the National Theatre, which is where I met Martin Krise from the Club for Ancient Prague.
This is the start of the street, because over here is the spot where you can see the Prague panorama and the Vltava River and the island, and the National Theatre, which is the most important building in this place. And we are standing in some yard behind the National Theatre, and there is new buildings added to the National Theatre in the 80s, and this is the old yard which is between the new buildings and the old monastery.
The street as such is not that old. Like many other European capitals, Prague got rid of its city walls in the mid-19th century, making way for unparalleled development. Národní třída was then known as Neue Allee, or New Alley. I met architecture historian Zdeněk Lukeš at another of the street's institutions, the renowned Café Luva. Over a latte and a raspberry cake, Mr. Lukeš told me that with the demolition of the city walls, enough space was cleared for decades of construction.
Of course, it was a possibility for best architects here in Prague and also in Vienna to design some important buildings on this ring and also in adjacent space of Wenceslas Square. And that's why that from the end of 19th century, luxury neo-Renaissance and neo-Baroque houses were built there, and also important palaces in the break of century in the style of Art Nouveau. And then also in between wars period, some examples of functionalist architecture.
The iconic building of the National Theatre, glowing with gold, was a great symbol of Czech nationalism. The theatre, inaugurated in June 1881, attested to the wealth and confidence of the emerging Czech bourgeoisie.
The National Theatre is one of the best examples of historicism in architecture. It was very inspired by Viennese opera. And the lot was on a very important space, very near of the Vltava River, of course, and on the edge of the bank and also at the beginning of Národní třída. That's why that the lot was fine, but not so large. That's why it was not so easy to design architecture there. But I think both architects, Zitek and Schulz, were successful, and the Proud building is one of the best examples of 19th century architecture here in Prague.
The strategic location of the theater changed the nature of the whole street. Prague at the time had about 180,000 inhabitants, and although most of them were Czechs, the German language and culture was still dominant. The new street therefore became the Czechs' favorite promenade, and with people came shops, cafes, theaters and bars. Zdeněk Lukáš describes the kind of buildings that emerged in and around Národní at the time.
The typical palace from that era was multi-proposal building, connected with other buildings, with a set of corridors, something like inner streets or hidden streets, with shops, also with cafes on first floors of that buildings. It was very typical for a central part of city. Then some culture functions like cinemas, theaters, or also bars in the basement of these palaces. Then two, three levels of offices and luxury apartments on top floors. It was very similar to palaces in Viennese Ring of the same period of or some boulevards in Paris, London and so on.
Among all the newly constructed palaces and the buzz of the city, one building stood out then as it stands now, that had been there even before the street was created. In the 17th century, members of the Roman Catholic Order of the Ursulines arrived in Prague and eventually settled outside the old town, right behind the city walls.
It was built behind the, or on the border of the old town and new town, and the street, which is now called Národní třída, was this time only a ditch, and it was the end of one town and the start of the other. So the monastery was built, as usual in Prague, in Prague or in the Czech towns, was built somewhere aside.
The convent of the Ursuline sisters is right next to the National Theatre. The Baroque complex, which includes the Church of St. Ursula, was once home to as many as 40 nuns, while today there are seven. One of them is Sister Katerina, who showed me around.
The sisters bought the house which was in this place 7 years before this. They lived in Na Újezdě. But this was very small, and they were quite famous and had more and more pupils. So they decided to bought the big house of family Příchovský.
The Order of the Ursulines is devoted to education. The sisters run a nearby kindergarten and an elementary school. But Sister Katerina says they do more than that.
Not only education, we also care for, let us say, young people, and we help them to find their vocation in life.
Isn't it difficult, or isn't it perhaps distracting, because we are now in the center of Prague? How do you find life here as opposed to maybe some more quiet area, you know, outside big city? Is it important at all that you are here?
You know, we were here for centuries, and we are connected with this place. And it is convenient to be inside the city.
But the nuns' presence at Národní did not go uninterrupted. Soon after the communist coup of 1948, the sisters were forced to leave, and the state confiscated the convent. In 1957, it became the home of the Institute of Endocrinology. Its erstwhile head, Professor Luboslav Starka, joined the institute as a young doctor soon after it was established and has worked there ever since. He says he has always enjoyed the privilege of working in such an exceptional place.
In the early 1960s, Národní looked different, but I would say the atmosphere was charged with potential. The presence of the Československý spisovatel publishing house, located in a beautiful Art Nouveau building, gave the street a special feel. It wasn't just that you could meet prominent writers in the street, but Czechoslovak writers at that time molded the country's politics to a great extent.
Professor Starka was unhappy when in 1984 the new stage was added to the historical building of the National Theatre and blocked his view. He was not alone. Many thought the massive glass cube out of place and lacking respect for its environment. But initial plans for a more modest structure had been dropped after the theatre managers changed their minds over its purpose. The new stage now features some interesting experimental art shows, but its appearance, which some have likened to a half-sucked candy, still works as deterrent. However, Zdeněk Lukáš says that young people are slowly learning to appreciate it.
Thanks to the idea of famous Czech glass maker Professor Libenský, who covered the whole coat of the building with glass panels, the building looks quite good. And what is very interesting that people in late communist period hate this building as an example of arrogant communist architecture. And situation now is a little bit different because young generation of architects had an idea that this is an example of interesting type of maybe arrogant architecture, but interesting, of course, with the glass coat and so. But the interior, for me, it's terrible, and the acoustic of the theater is not so good.
Národní Street boasts another famous monument of the communist era, albeit a more successful one. In 1975, the My department store opened at the corner of Národní and Spálená with a minimalist design and a number of great technical details. These include bare ceilings, a see-through rear facade, and a total of 13 lifts that could fit entire trucks with goods.
This house is a symbol for our generation of architects because the department store was designed by young, in that period, it means in the beginning of 70s, young group of architects around Karel Hubáček, who was the leading architect of that late communist period and creator of famous TV tower on the hill of Ještěd. And that young, angry man designed a department store which looked like a department store. It means without any decorations, very simple forms, but on the other side, very far from brutal communist architecture of that period, with some nice details, especially inside this building.
Maj, spelled M-A-J, is a poetic Czech word for May. The store is still there today. After a brief spell as a Kmart, it became part of the Tesco chain in 1996. The building recently underwent a complete renovation and is now called Maj, spelled M-Y. To discuss the overhaul, I sat down with managing director Markus Chipchase at a fruit bar on Maj's third floor.
Our idea was to bring a multi-branded department store concept here. So one where it's not intimidating, you can shop on different levels, you don't have to go into from one boutique to the other, you can choose from different brands. And we want to allow people to shop in a traditional department store with a multi-branded concept.
In 2007, the building was listed as a national monument, which meant any renovation would have to follow strict rules. Mr. Chipchase says they worked with the architects who created the original plans to avoid any problems.
We actually worked with the three original authors of the architects of the building very closely, so that what we did inside and outside was acceptable to them as well as to the city. So yes, it does give you some added process, added complication, but that's what you've got to do in the centre of a beautiful city like Prague.
Whose idea was it to call it Mai in the English spelling, which is quite a nice sort of touch to it?
Well, we did some market research on this. So really, essentially, the name came from customers. And we had a short list of about five different names. They all had to have certain criteria. They had to be simple, easily to remember, international, because we used the same brand in other countries. And we liked the connection with Mai, even though the pronunciation is different in Czech, of course. We liked the fact it had a meaning in Czech, even though it was also had a meaning in English. And we liked the fact it did sort of hark back to the times when this location was called Mai, as in May.
There are several cafes in and around the department store, and many more all along the street. You can even get an espresso served by a real Italian. But there are two venues that have always been natural pit stops. Café Louver, established in 1901 and revived in the 1990s, and Café Slavia. Since it first opened in 1881, the same year as the theatre across the street, generations of writers, actors, journalists and students have sat under the Absinthe Drinker, a 1900 painting by Victor Oliva. Under communism, it was also a favorite haunt of some opposition figures, including Václav Havel. At Slavia, I met with Vladimír Hanzel, at one time a close collaborator of the former president.
Václav Havel bydlel na tehdejším Engelsově nábřeží, dneska Rašín.
Václav Havel used to live on what was then called Engels and is now Rašín embankment, next to the dancing house. We'd usually meet at this fish restaurant called Na Rybarnie, which was just around the corner, or at a restaurant down by the river, which is now called Vltava. Havel and others, particularly the young ones, would also often go to Café Slavia, which was famous for being frequented by well-known personalities, like Jaroslav Seifert and Jiří Kalář.
Vladimír Hanzel happened to be the first to tell the future president about what happened at Národní on the 17th of November. He says Slavia was never his favorite hangout, although he likes how the café was renovated in the 1990s.
No, já bych řekl, že teď to vypadá asi víc prvorepublikově než teď.
I would say that it now has more of a first republic look than before. The character has been preserved. It's very similar, you can tell if you look at some details, like that glowing green clock over there. But it wasn't possible to get back the famous painting Absinthe Drinker by Victor Oliva. Someone from Prague City Hall apparently took it, so they had to get a replica of the painting that used to hang here.
Takže nakonec tam je replika toho obrazu, ten tady celou dobu visel.
In 1998, then-President Havel brought then-US First Lady Hillary Clinton to Slavia when she came to his Forum 2000 conference in Prague. 4 years before that, he skipped the café with President Bill Clinton on their way to the Redeta Jazz Club, located in the same building as Café Louver. In the club, Mr. Havel gave his guest a saxophone, and the American president did not resist. The audience at Reduta included Czech jazz legend Josef Vejvoda, who first performed in the club in 1963. But he says that Czech fans seem to have abandoned Reduta since then.
Reduta is and was the most famous jazz club in Middle Europe. And it was fantastic. We played for a lot of Czech students and for a lot of Czech people, and after revolution, Velvet Revolution, is this the big difference. The entrance fee and drinks are too expensive now. And I'm asking all the concerts when we play here, how many people understand Czech when I start to speak Czech? And sometimes nobody, sometimes one, two, three people. But the big problem is entrance fee is 300 crowns, I think, and for students is it too much? And this is the biggest difference what was and what is now.
And as for Mr. Clinton's performance, Josef Vejvoda has probably heard better sax players.
I was invited from Mr. President Havel. I have at home invitation. It was a surprise, but a nice surprise. I was sitting here, I was listening to, and not every jazz, every president played jazz. Clinton did it. It was not something very excellent, but he played My Funny Valentine, and he got this instrument, Czech instrument, tenor saxophone. But I compare this man with our president now, what we have, Mr. Klaus, and I'm glad we have now president which really, really like jazz. Tell me and show me another president who will do every month jazz concert at the castle. I think it is something very special.
Whatever the future might hold for this prominent Prague boulevard, it will remain the site for one of the most significant milestones in Czech history. Markéta Kolářová, who marched through the street in November 1989 along with thousands of others, says she will never forget the place where the hopes of her generation came true.
I think I will always remember it when I go through Národní, because I think that it was without any hesitation. I can say that the day then was one of the most important days maybe in my life, along with the birth of my both children and these kinds of things, because that was really a big hope, a day of hope for us all, and a great thing that happened, although we had already not expected that something like that will happen in our lifetime. So we are very grateful, and I will always remember it.